The San Francisco Giants are hoping Father Time is nice after Justin Verlander signs a deal to go to the Giants. Let's talk about it. I love this episode, Lindsay, because we're talking Justin Verlander, ODU legend, and we're talking about possibility of a resurgence of a career after already having a resurgence of a career. He's playing with house money, and this time he's doing it in the National League West. Hello, everyone. Welcome to First Pitch, your daily MLB recap, news for all everything under the sun when it comes to Major League Baseball. I'm Christian Rau. You can find me on Twitter at @FirstPitch_MLB. Lindsay Crosby at Crosby Baseball on the Twitter X machine. And Lindsay, Justin Verlander heading to the Bay, San Francisco Giants on a interesting contract. I didn't see this one coming whatsoever, but we are going to see a really tough division in the National League West. And my first thoughts before I head it to you is, if you're Justin Verlander, 42 years old, why do you want to go and play Colorado, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the San Diego Padres? Why do you want to play at Coors Field in division? Either way, he's getting a paycheck at 42 years old and could be a lot of cool things. What's your thoughts on it? Justin Verlander in the Bay.
Justin Verlander has 15 million reasons to sign up to face the Dodgers and everybody else, the Diamondbacks, everybody else in that division. I figured that Verlander and Scherzer, neither one of them were done, right? Like Verlander said he wanted to pitch, so he was 45. And I think the way last year ended for Verlander kind of put a bad taste in his mouth, right? He missed a little bit of time in April for a shoulder, but then he had that neck issue in like early June. And when he came back in August, he was bad. Like he put up an ERA of like 8 down the stretch, took his ERA from 3.95 to 5.48. And that's not like this dude's going to be a Hall of Famer. And that, he won a Cy Young like 2 years ago. That's not how you want to go out. But before that neck injury, he was 3-2 with a 3.95 ERA. It's not the classic Justin Verlander we know, but he obviously could still pitch, right? He could still be additive to a major league rotation. So I'm excited for the young Giants pitchers who need the veteran leadership, who need that elder statesman who can kind of give them advice and chat to them in the bullpen and when they're doing their side sessions and kind of impart his wisdom. I'm excited for that because the Giants need a leap from some of those young guys like a Kyle Harrison if they want to ever have a chance of catching the Dodgers in the West.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You took exactly what I was going to say next. Landon Rope, Hayden Birdsong, Mason Black, and of course Kyle Harrison are all going to benefit from a guy like Justin Verlander just being in your clubhouse. And he doesn't have to be an ace. There's no doubt about that. He's not going to be your ace. He doesn't have to be in San Francisco because they already have a great rotation as it is. I'm guessing that he's going to be at the back of your rotation. We might even see him not go every five. You might see him even get skip starts. He's going to be 42 years old in this season. Let me just put that in perspective, Lindsay. He is 42. The Cy Young winner for the San Francisco Giants in 2008 and 2009, Giants fans know this, Tim Lincecum, is 40 years old right now. He hasn't pitched since 2016. And Justin Verlander is going to pitch for the Giants at age 42. So it's going to be a really interesting piece. Where does this put this Giants team when it comes to terms in the National League West? Does this move them to possibly battling Arizona for second best or the Padres for second best? It's a tough spot to determine who's the second best team. I think we're all safe to say the Dodgers are the favorites, but where do you put the Giants right now?
For me, they're battling the Padres for third, right? Like you heard last year, the Dodgers were worried about San Diego. Like that's the team they least wanted to face in the postseason. But that Padres team, there's rumors they're going to trade Dylan Cease. Some of their offseason guys, they went to get like Tanner Scott, their trade deadline acquisition in relief. He's a free agent. Joe Musgrove is out with Tommy John. Jurickson Profar is a free agent. I think Arizona's done enough where they can kind of be penciled in as the second best team here. And the Giants are competing with San Diego for third because they signed Willie Adames. Yes, they have Matt Chapman. Yes, but they're still in a situation where they've got Lamonte Wade at first base. They have a lot of youth and inexperience in that rotation to go along with, you know, with Robbie Ray and now Justin Verlander. And the only real prospect that you see that could potentially make an impact is Bryce Eldridge, and that's at first base. And so there's still questions in the outfield. There's still questions in the infield. There's still questions about power production and in the pitching staff. And it's just kind of hard to leapfrog them from a team in Arizona that was in the World Series 2 seasons ago and just added the best starter in free agency in Corbin Burnes.
What else do you think needs to be needed for the Giants to make that jump? Can they do that in this offseason? Is that something that Buster Posey should do? Or do you think this is a slow build? This is a brand new management heading San Francisco Giants. Although the name is familiar, it's brand new front office, Lindsay. Is this something that he has to force his hand right away to make a division lead or to compete to get into the postseason? I mean, we're only talking a few years removed from 107 wins. And I think we all know that was probably overperforming, but what's your thoughts? Where do they need to go?
So I feel like it's a good collection of offensive talent, right? A lot of these guys, you know, had WRC pluses over 100 last year. You know, Hilliot Ramos was a big surprise. Mike Yastrzemski kind of did his usual 105. Tyler Fitzgerald was really exciting. Matt Chapman, who got re-signed. Younghoo Lee in center field, he only got a quarter of a season before he got hurt and missed the rest of the year. They got to get him acclimated to the domestic game. We see a lot of those international free agents. He came over from the KBO. We see a lot of them struggle the first couple months of the season before they settle down, right? Seiya Suzuki wasn't amazing right away. Just things like that. But it all kind of comes down to the pitching staff for me. You love Logan Webb. He's been one of the workhorses in baseball the last few years, but behind him, Robbie Ray threw 30 innings after Tommy John. Jordan Hicks making the conversion from relief to starting, I think barely broke 100 innings. His ERA was over 4. Kyle Harrison was at one point, I think entering last year, probably the top lefty pitching prospect in baseball, but his acclimation was a bit of a struggle. His ERA was over 4.5. Verlander wasn't great last year. There's just a lot of questions in this rotation. And as good as that offense is, and as much as that ballpark is going to help your pitching, it's not enough. You have to get quality starts out of this rotation. And just there's so many question marks with these guys. That's going to be the big determining factor. It kind of ignoring the fact that your bullpen is kind of a mess, right? You have a lot of guys, you know, Camilo Doval struggled enough where he got optioned down. A lot of these guys profile as 6th, 7th, 8th inning guys, Tyler Rogers, Taylor Rogers, Ryan Walker. Who's the closer? I don't really know. And so the staff as a whole has to get better. I don't know if Verlander's enough to move the needle, but if Verlander can look like even the Verlander of 23, where his strikeout rate was down, but his ERA was good, and he can help some of these young pitchers like the guys you mentioned improve, that might be enough to get them into a wild card. But they're not catching the Dodgers anytime soon because the Dodgers are the most complete team in baseball.
80-82 last year. In order for them to make a wild card, they'd need another 9 wins. If you were putting it in perspective of last season, they were 9 games out of the playoffs. Do you think if you had to make that decision right now, as of right now, 80-82, are they better than that in 2025?
They're better, but they're not in the playoffs. I think they at least break 500. Right. I like Willy Adames at shortstop, adding him another year of development from some of these guys like a Tyler Fitch. I think they break 500. I don't have them in the postseason as of now, though, in the National League. And I just think that's because you've seen other teams that were in the postseason last year. None of those teams really got worse. Right. The Mets didn't get worse. They added Juan Soto. The Phillies didn't get worse. They had a couple pieces. I just don't see them passing anybody who either who was a wild card team last year, the Braves. They're not going to pass the Braves. So I have them over 500, but out of the postseason, probably the first team out.
Well, this would be a normal segue talking about the other team in the Bay, but we no longer can say that. But the Athletics, I can't even say
Sacramento Athletics.
According to MLB, we can just say the Athletics. I think the reason behind that is because the Sacramento Athletics just sound terrible, but it does. Brent Rooker goes and signs a 5-year extension, $60 million with the Athletics, according to SpotTrack. That is the second highest extension in franchise history. Goes ahead and do that. And I thought what was interesting is I thought that when they signed him, they said designated hitter goes for the extension. Interesting move on that one. But signing him, signing a DH for that much for the Athletics and a team that's building up, they didn't make a lot of trades. They weren't sellers at the deadline like we all expected to, as we've seen for the past few seasons. They start to have a young core in Rooker, the 30-year-old, going to be 32 some point in the season next year. Or excuse me, 31. Math is hard, apparently. What's your thoughts on Rooker signing an extension with the Athletics? I almost said Oakland.
They bought out 3 arb years and 2 free agent seasons of a dude who's just now 30, and he's still going to make $60 million. I love this deal for Brent Rooker. You know, he was a waiver claim. Like, people forget that. He was a waiver claim. It was a late bloomer, hit 30 homers in 2023, made the All-Star team in 23, didn't make it last year, responded by batting .293 with 39 homers. Like, it's safe to say he is the best player on the A's, and this is not a deal they had to give. I feel like some of this is Players Association, please don't put a grievance on us for not spending enough revenue sharing money, but I don't care because a good dude got rewarded. He's a great follow on Twitter. He reportedly is great with the fans, loves playing for the franchise. I'm thrilled about this, both for him and for A's fans who got frustrated by not seeing this team spend. 2 of their largest contracts they've ever given out for this offseason. Luis Severino got $67 million, and then this is $60 million. It's the first 5-year extension that they've given a player since Trevor Cahill got one in 2011. So I love for A's fans that they feel like they might be able to actually buy a jersey of a dude, because theoretically, he's around for the long haul. Love this for him. Love this for the fans. Hope it works out for the A's. Please keep spending money.
Yeah, it's looking good. And to me and Troy said it yesterday, the American League West is a question mark. We don't know what Houston's going to be doing. We don't know if they're going to continue to take a step back, or if we should even consider it being a step back. The Rangers obviously had so many injuries last season, and but they're starting to make some news or some moves to retool. And then you have the Angels, who are actually also spending and making some moves as well. So the Athletics, I think, are in a prime spot to compete for the division. I don't know if I want to call them favorites by any means, no doubt about that. But you go ahead and sign a free agent like Severino. You make a trade for Jeffrey Springs. I thought that was a really good trade as well. And then clear up a guy to solidify Brent Rooker as your number 2 in the lineup, if you will. I think having him with Lawrence Butler leading off, Butler had a great year last year. If he can have a resurgence from that yet again, you have a good catcher behind the plate in Shea Langeliers. I think the only other offensive addition this offseason was what, Gio Urshela? I think that's the only other addition that the Athletics added. Yeah. I swear, I want to say Oakland so many times. We're going to have to get like a swear jar every time that I think about saying, or if I say Oakland.
Ping every time.
It's going to have to happen. But yeah, I really like this Athletic squad, and I think they're doing it right. Now that we've finally seen that they didn't sell at the deadline last year, they're building around this core that they've established after really feel like they've sucked for a while. It really wasn't that long, but it felt like that, just based on how Houston was just dominating that space. I think we're going to see the Athletics finally step forward. Unfortunately, we're going to see it on a minor league field.
I mean, but that's going to help the offense, right? Like, this is a situation. This offense was surprisingly good in the second half. Like, I don't think people realize the A's were a good hitting team in the second half. And a lot of these players now, they've got locked up for a long time. I was kind of perusing the Fangraphs roster resource tool real quick. Brent Rooker, 5 years of control. Shea Langeliers, 4 years. Lawrence Butler, 4 years. Zach Gelof, 5 years. J.J. Bleday, 4 years. Tyler Soderstrom, 5 years. Jacob Wilson, 6 years. Closer Mason Miller, 5 years. And they added Luis Severino and Jeffrey Springs on 3-year deals. Like, there's a lot of continuity there to like. And a lot of those guys could conceivably be around if and when they get to Las Vegas. But it's entirely possible to see how a couple more moves or some natural development from some of these arms they have, and they could legitimately contend for a wildcard spot, which is not something I thought I would say this time a year ago. But those young hitters are actually hitting, and there's a lot of young talent to like. If you had to give me an all 25 and under team, obviously Rooker's not part of that, but a lot of these Oakland guys would be in contention to make that all 25 and under team.
Ding.
And Lawrence, I said Oakland. Yeah, I did it. I said Oakland. Golly.
No, I'm with you. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just thought it was perfect timing. No, the 25 and unders, there's plenty of good players on this squad, and I'm really excited. And I can't believe I'm saying that. I'm excited to watch Athletics baseball in 2025 to see what they're made of. Severino had a couple of last seasons in New York. Speaking of New York pitchers, there's some talks about the other side of there with the pitching rotation with the New York Yankees. Obviously, bringing in a guy like Max Fried, you have an opportunity to make some moves. They did trade Nestor Cortes, but it still looks like there's an odd man out in the situation, and that's Marcus Stroman. Bob Nightingale came out with a report saying the Yankees are actively trying to trade Marcus Stroman and his $18 million salary. I think they're obviously trying to make some moves, trying to make some more money, and maybe open up to make another deal this offseason. It looks like the Yankees are really trying to go for it, even after not getting Juan Soto. We've had that conversation, how we think that this could be a better thing for the Yankees long term. Moving away from Stroman would probably help that as well. Where do you think Marcus Stroman could land, or who should be interested in Marcus Stroman?
Honestly, it has to be a money thing, because we've seen how pitching injuries can devastate a team. And so many teams are using 6-man rotations anyway. They're in a situation, Clark Schmidt, Luis Gil in the rotation above Stroman. They both have options. They went through a ton of starting pitchers last year because of injury. It feels weird that they're trying to move him, but this is something. I'm thinking about teams with good defenses, right? Like, who could take on Marcus Stroman and afford that money and have it not kind of kill them? The problem is Marcus Stroman isn't the same Marcus Stroman. His ground ball rate last year, under 50%. His strikeout rate was like 16%. Something was like 5% down from his career norms. His velocities dropped to just barely 90 miles an hour on the sinker. And he gave up almost a 300 batting average to lefties. Like, he's not the same guy that he was even when they signed him 2 years ago. And I think that's the issue. It's a lot of money to pay for 1 year of a 34-year-old Marcus Stroman, who is clearly not the same guy he was. Reportedly, they tried to move him in a Nolan Arenado deal. The deal never even made it to Arenado to void his no-trade clause because the Cardinals weren't interested. I honestly don't know who they're going to find to take him without either eating a lot of the money or attaching a prospect. Because there's so many guys I'd rather pay $18.5 million to than Marcus Stroman for 2025. It's just, he's not the same guy. He's not the guy. Like, Charlie Morton got $15 million. I'd rather pay Charlie Morton $18.5 million than pay Marcus Stroman. As weird as that sounds, it's just, he's not the same guy anymore.
Is this something that maybe who loses on the Jack Flaherty sweepstakes, because that's like the last really major pitcher left on the free agent market, goes ahead and makes a move for it? Like, maybe, for example, the Tigers, who obviously need to get some sort of pitching, you know, identity, because that pitching chaos obviously can't sustain for 162. Or maybe a team that is battling those Tigers, like the Kansas City Royals. When those teams possibly may be in the mix.
If the Yankees are willing to absorb some of that money, right? I think a better solution for the Yankees would be to try to do some sort of bad contract for bad contract swap. I don't know if they'd want to dip into the Jordan Montgomery well again, but I could see trying to work out something with Arizona where you swap pitchers. It's just, to me, the contract's the issue. Marcus Stroman in a vacuum, there are teams that could use Marcus Stroman, right? He pitched well when he was with the Mets. They may want him back. Like, you could see things work, but with that deal on him, and I forgot about this, he has a conditional player option. He pitches 100, I think it's 140 innings. He can pick up his player option, and be around for another season. So it's definitely, it's to me, it's either going to be a veteran for veteran swap of bad contracts, or it's going to be they eat some of the money and they get a fringe prospect. I don't know which one would be better, but they're going to have to move on from him at this point. He never really worked out in New York. They were never really happy with him. I just don't really know who makes that deal. If they eat a bunch of money, maybe Cincinnati would be willing to take on Marcus Stroman. It's a weird fit, but it's a ground ball guy in a small ballpark. Maybe you feel better about that than you would getting a fly ball pitcher like Verlander is a fly ball pitcher at this point in his career. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of good fits for Stroman at that cost in baseball.
Interesting move, yes. The AAA King, let's talk about him, right? The AAA King is on the move. Bobby Dalbec leaving the Red Sox to go on a minor league deal to the White Sox. And the name probably sounds familiar, although he hasn't really done well in the majors. But he had his opportunities. He had plenty of chances with Boston, just never could get it going in the majors. But as soon as he went right back down to AAA, he raked, Lindsay. He always had it going. It makes you wonder if it's a mental thing or whatever the case may be, but it just never translated to the major leagues. Hopefully a change of scenery could help a guy like Bobby Dalbec.
Yeah, he never really seemed, after the first couple seasons, he never really seemed comfortable with major league pitching, right? His strikeout rate was never good in the first couple of years, but like it was in the low 30s, which was fine. But in 23 and 24, he was striking out half of the time, and you just can't do that. And to me, getting significantly worse like that, kind of like to your point, it tells me it was something mental, right? Like it just mentally, for some reason, he was yipped up by the idea of the majors and major league breaking balls. I know they were small samples the last 2 years, but what the White Sox are getting, they can afford to give him plenty of run. He's a guy that, you know, has had decent walk rates. Like his career walk rate in the majors is like 7.5%. Yes, strikeout issues. He's got decent exit velocity. He hits the ball harder than average. He doesn't have a huge ground ball problem or anything. It feels like it's a change of scenery, maybe getting a more advantageous ballpark for his profile, and just a chance to play every day, I think would be big for Bobby Dalbec. He can play a lot of different positions. He's listed at first and third. He's played everywhere, right? He's played short. He's played second. He's played right field. So they can use him anywhere in Chicago. I like this move for the White Sox because the risk is so minimal, but the upside's huge. Because if he does figure it out and starts raking, they can either keep him for almost nothing, or they can flip him at the deadline, which you should be doing if you're a non-contender, is flipping guys at the deadline. So I love this move for the White Sox. Low risk, high reward.
How much longer do you think we're going to have the conversation that Chicago White Sox need to continue to flip at the deadline? When do you think that conversation finally changes to them getting back to being a franchise that's, dare I say, respected?
Am I allowed to say when the team gets sold to somebody else? Kind of feels like you're in that situation, right? They've got talent in the minors, but even their talent has struggled, right? Colson Montgomery looked like he was going to be one of the top prospects in baseball. He's dealt with injuries. They've had a lot of really young pitching like Noah Schultz, but those guys have so much time between now and when they're in the majors. It's just a team right now that's so incredibly young. It's going to be, I don't see them coming out of purgatory for 2 or 3 more years, right? They got a lot of prospects. They got to get these guys to the majors. They're going to have multiple catchers if this all works out, but it's going to be 2 or 3 years before I think they give up the mantle of worst team in baseball to somebody else, unless they get just massive leaps from all these prospects earlier than expected.
Let's wrap up the final five with a fun little game, and let's talk about some of the free agents left. Let's create a lineup okay, of the top free agents left and do that. Let's start right around. We'll go around the horn. We'll start at first base. I think it's safe to say that the best remaining free agent first baseman is Pete Alonso. Where do you think Pete's going to land? Do you think he goes back to the Mets? Do you think he's starting to only get maybe a 1 year deal? Where do you see him landing?
Gross. Yeah. We've talked about this, I think, on the show a little bit. There's not a lot of other places for Pete to go. I think at best it's the Boris special. It's like 3 for 90 or whatever, going back to New York, trying to opt out and going back through this whole process again. Nobody else in baseball really needs a first baseman. There's not really any good options behind him. The second and third best options are what? Anthony Rizzo and Justin Turner. But yeah, everybody else has gotten their first baseman. So I guess he's going back to the Mets.
This is a tough one. Who's the best second baseman now that Gleyber Torres is off the books?
Oh, second base is gross. Jorge Polanco is not a good second baseman. He's a good infielder. Like, he's a good hitter. He's not a good second baseman. Other than that, Brendan Rodgers, maybe. I mean, Paul DeYoung, yeah. I think of him as a shortstop, but maybe second base there. Jose Iglesias hit the Fountain of Youth last year at like 35. Maybe it was the song. He has to write a new song in his new city. But I mean, maybe Jose Iglesias or Jorge Polanco. I would dare to say second base is as bad as center field is now. Center field was a wasteland going into the year.
Yeah. Are any of them Yankees? Because I feel like that's the biggest need for the Yankees now.
Didn't I hear that Brendan Rodgers was meeting with the Yankees? I feel like Brendan Rodgers and Ha-Seong Kim are probably the best options left for New York. I honestly, side note, I think Ha-Seong Kim, who I have as shortstop in this team, so we can talk about him now.
Same.
I think Ha-Seong Kim is the best bet for New York because they're in a situation they talked about. They want to give DJ LeMahieu one more shot. Well, guess what? It's going to take a little bit of time for Kim to come back after the shoulder surgery. So you have some time to see if maybe DJ LeMahieu can recapture some of the old form. I think he's 36 this year. And if not, guess what? You'll get Kim back a month or 2 months into the season. You slot him into second base. If the arm strength's okay, maybe you put him at third and you put Jazz at second and let's go. So it makes the most sense to me.
I think I remember also the Yankees were trying to get Rodgers at the deadline last year and couldn't. Colorado was being weird about it.
So weird that they didn't trade him at the deadline. Yeah.
Yeah.
Expiring deal, you're not in it. Always trade that guy.
100%. Third base, Alex Bregman, obviously. That's the big consideration. Yeah. Boston seems to be in the mix. Looks like Houston's out. Boston or Detroit? Where are we seeing him?
I think you're going to see Nolan Arenado in Boston, and you're going to see Bregman in Detroit. Bregman reunites with Hinch. Arenado beefs up the defense at third base, and Devers moves to first, which means Tristan Casas is another competitor to anybody, to Pete Alonso getting a deal, right? But it feels like the Hinch and Bregman connection, they need a veteran on that team, right? I don't love that they already signed a second baseman, but I feel like Bregman's the best fit there.
I think we can skip catcher because I feel like there's just nothing in catcher. Anything that goes there is probably going to be a minor league deal.
Elias Diaz, maybe? Like, I don't have much here for catcher. I mean,
was an all-star at
Grandal,
one point.
I don't think it's worth it. Yeah, Diaz was an all-star at one point. A lot of it's depth guys, right? Kurt Casale's out there still. James McCann's out there. They're all backups. Catcher was a wasteland after you got past Higashioka and Darno and Jansen and Kelly.
All right, let's combine outfield here for the final minute. Jerickson Profar, corner outfielder, Anthony Santander. Who would you consider the center fielder? I'm not really quite sure in this case. But in this case, Profar and Santander, those are obviously two big ones left. I'm surprised Profar doesn't have that big of a market after the season he's had. I'm going to guess that even though that they're having a hard time finding money to spend, Profar is going to find a way back to the Padres. And I'm sold on seeing Santander. I think the Blue Jays have to hit somebody because they've been second place all year round. So I'm guessing Santander hits with the Blue Jays. How about you?
Boy, can you imagine how much running Dalton Varsho is going to have to do in center when he has Santander on one side and George Springer on the other? Just how much running he's going to have to do to cover ground in center field. Santander makes sense over there. I do think Profar and Santander are the two at corner outfielders. Center field has been, it's all glove first guys, right? Do you want Harrison Bader? Do you want Michael A. Taylor? They're the top two up there, unless you think that you can get playoff Kike Hernandez to be regular season Kike Hernandez. But I'd go with Bader. He's like 3 years younger, but I don't love any of the center field options. Center field and shortstop are the two hardest positions I feel like to fill in baseball with an above average guy nowadays. And it's just, that's a problem, obviously.
I was telling Troy this yesterday. I feel like we haven't had a chance to take a breath, Lindsay. It's in the middle of January. We're already talking about when pitchers and catchers report. The stove has not shut off even for a second. Yeah, me too. I love it. Absolutely. Gives us plenty to talk about here and plenty to talk to you guys here at First Pitch. We'll be back here with another episode tomorrow. Again, plenty to talk about. We got so much here. We're only we're less than 45 days from pitchers and catchers. We're less than 90 days away from opening day. I mean, it's crazy that how fast this offseason's already hit, Lindsay, but we got you covered right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow on First Pitch.